Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you'll get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matters more than ever. Place your money line, prop, or parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park.
You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, activities, excursions, and more in one place to make your trip truly unforgettable. Viator has over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from. Everything from simple tours to extreme adventures and all the niche, interesting stuff in between. So you can plan something that everyone you're traveling with will enjoy. Real traveler reviews give the inside scoop from people who've already been on the experiences you're considering, so you can plan with confidence. Free cancellation helps you plan for the unexpected, and 24/7 customer support means you can travel worry-free. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
This is a podcast from Minute Media.
Hello and welcome to the Over and Back Classic NBA Podcast. I am Jason, and with me as usual is Rich. Hello, Rich.
Hey, what's going on?
Not much. I mean, I'm just looking forward to continuing our streak of incredible Over and Back Classic NBA Podcast episodes, up to 270-something.
That's what I thought. Yeah, somewhere around there. I mean, span of 7 to 8 to 9 years. I don't remember how long the show's been, right. But
2014, it seems like, right?
Yeah, right. That sounds about right. So, yeah, it would really suck to set up the show that this time and then just absolutely blow it this time, you know, on this episode. But
it's possible,
especially with this topic, it'd be very ironic. But we'll see what ends up happening. But I think, Jason, I'm confident we're going to do it again and have another incredible show.
Oh, Rich, I'm your confidence instills me with confidence, enough confidence to, you know.
I was not confident about it, so yeah. I don't know if I should be the lead there.
All right, fair enough. We'll do our best anyway. So, yeah. Yes, so we are going to talk about regular season win streaks. Actually, we're going to talk about playoff win streaks as well a little bit, but we're going to dive in deep to the regular season win streaks. The Phoenix Suns recently had a 18-game winning streak, which is pretty good, although in terms of NBA history, it falls short slightly of the all-time greatest streaks. We're going to talk about those. We're going to focus mostly on single-season ones because we do feel like multi-season win streaks are kind of BS, but we will at least briefly mention those as well. But yeah, it's going to be a fun show, I think. You and I, before we decided to do this episode, were like, wait, we haven't done this before?
Yeah, we were both convinced. I was like, hey, let's do this. And then you're like, well, we've definitely done that. And I'm like, oh, yeah, you're right. We probably have. And then we probably spent like a good hour, at least I did, being like, no, right, we definitely did. And going through and clicking all of our old episodes and being like, yeah, maybe we've discussed some of these teams and had you know, discussions about these teams and their entire seasons or their places in NBA history. We've actually never sat down and done this team is on the longest, you know, win streak. It may be a result of it not happening in our time or never being as close as, you know, the Suns got. I mean, there were a few ones that we're going to talk about here, obviously, that got pretty close and, some postseason ones and some other weird stuff. But yeah, we have never actually done a longest regular season win streaks. And well, we're going to change that right now.
Absolutely. Yeah. Right. We've done best starts, which I think is the one that we were a little confused about. It's like, oh, we did the best starts. And one of these teams on here that we're going to talk about a little bit also has the record for best start in NBA history. So gonna be fun to dive into.
Absolutely, but let's get right into it with the number one team, pretty famous win streak here, 1972 Los Angeles Lakers, 33 straight games. It begins November 5th, 1971 against the Baltimore Bullets, ends January 9th, 1972 versus the Milwaukee Bucks. The end of the season result after all this win streak, we'll talk about that a bit as well. They went 69-13, and they won an NBA championship. That's important too to note. Note what most teams do after they go on very, very long win streaks, and then what one of these teams that we're going to talk about does, which is very fun and unique here. But yeah, this it's obviously a very famous Lakers team, a very famous Lakers run. I mean, the biggest thing that you look at with this 1972 Lakers team, and a lot of things did change as the season went on, but probably the biggest thing in the offseason was bringing in Bill Sharman as the new head coach. So Joe Mullaney, who you know, gets maligned for his run a little bit, you know, yeah, he inherited a team that had been to the finals, and you know, it's not really totally fair to him because he got them to the finals again. You know what I mean? They in 1970, they lose to the Knicks, you know, 4-3, and then they go up against the buzzsaw that was Kareem and the Bucks. We'll talk about them a little bit later as well in 1971, and that's like, you know, that is seen as in with this team, and I get it. It's a stacked team. It's a pretty loaded team, but yeah, losing the finals and you know, back to back, losing to the Knicks and losing to the Bucks or whatever is seen as a massive failure for Joe Mullaney. So he's out of town, and Bill Sharman goes in, and you know, a lot of things are going to change. You know, and the big thing is the Lakers are old at this time, and that's a big reason why it was like, hey, our window is closing, so we got to make the most out of this. Will Chamberlain, he's in his 12th season. Elgin Baylor's in his 13th season. Jerry West is in his 11th season. So you bring in Bill Sharman with the idea that, hey, let's get this going. Let's win as quick as possible. And Bill Sharman, much to the surprise, I think, of a lot of people, institutes a faster tempo for the team and says, you know, no, here's what we're going to do. The prior year, they were ninth in pace. He says, we're going to go first. We're going to run. We're going to score. We're going to do this. We're going to do that. Wilt, you're not going to score all the time. You're going to get rebounds. You're going to pass. West, you're going to go. You know, Baylor, you're going to run. All these guys, we're going to run. We're going to have a higher tempo offense. We're going to get more shots up. We're going to score more. And that's how we're going to win. And Wilt and West were able to adapt to that style. Great. West was able to have one of his best seasons ever in his 11th season. Will Chamberlain, obviously, the numbers took a big hit, but he was able to become an even more important rebounder, even more important overall player in this new system. The problem, though, and the one, you know, huge, you know, loss in this all was Elgin Baylor, who just could not handle this style, couldn't handle the practices, couldn't handle the games. He was getting up there in age, had some knee injuries, and it was kind of all over for him. So 9 games into the season, he retires. And at the time of his retirement, the Lakers, who, you know, yeah, they revamped some things, they changed a little bit, they're 6-3, which isn't bad. You know, 6-3 is okay. That's not a record you're too upset about. November 5th, they'd win 110-106 over the Baltimore Bullets. All 5 guys in that Lakers lineup score in double figures. 31 for Gail Goodrich, who was really, really coming into his own here as well. 22 for Jim McMillan, who had replaced Elgin Baylor in the lineup. We're going to talk a lot about Jim McMillan. 19 for Jerry West, a cool 12-25 for Wilt. And, of course, 10 points for Happy Harrison. You can't leave out Happy Harrison.
You cannot leave out Happy Harrison. If you had left out Happy Harrison, I would have quit right now. We would have lost.
And they would have lost that. They would have lost that game. 110-106. You take the 10 away from Happy Harrison. That's a loss. This win streak never happens.
That's sad, Harrison, right there. If you don't get that
right, that win streak is done. Kaput. Doesn't happen. In this case, though, it's Happy Harrison did score 10 points. So on November 5th, they beat the Baltimore Bullets. They would not lose again until January. They decimate the previous all-time record, winning 33 games in a row. And what's really impressive about this one, what's super impressive, is they didn't squeak by. They won a lot. They won by an average of 16 points per game. 23 of their wins were by 10 or more points. 17 were by 15 or more points. And 8 were by 20 or more points. They also had a 30-point win, a 40-point win, and their 33rd win against Atlanta was a 44-point win. So it's not like they were slowing down. They were getting better, it seemed, with time. And, you know, I really, really quickly wanted to talk about the Elgin Baylor thing before we kind of get into, you know, what people average and all that sort of stuff. It's largely seen as like, hey, Baylor goes down and it kind of unlocks this offense and things get ramped up or whatever. And that's partially true, I think. I'm sure, like, you know, Jim McMillan was obviously able to fit in perfectly. Gail Goodrich was able to get a lot more shots. And everybody else was kind of able to open up their game a little bit more without Elgin Baylor. But, I mean, I don't think that it's like, if Baylor's knees did hold up, I don't think it's, you know, this team was really good. It's not like they were... I don't know. Do you think that this streak would have happened if Baylor was still around, or do you think he was an important, you know, his retirement was an important part of them really getting going?
Yeah, I mean, I think just because of the way it allowed the other guys to step up, particularly McMillan, I just think if Baylor is there, I mean, they still would have been a good team, maybe even a great team. They might have won a championship, but I don't think there's any possible way that they win 33 games in a row with such a big change to that team. I mean, that's, you know, I just think any element that you change, even a small one, it's lightning in a bottle. It just, I don't think you're going to be able to capture, you know, a 33 game winning streak. I don't think is possible if you shift the dynamics that much.
Yeah, and I kind of agree as well, because it's just, it was a whole different team with McMillan in there, and it was a whole different team without Elgin Baylor, and they were able to be faster. They were able to kind of just blow people away with their offense, and you know, not that Elgin couldn't have contributed to that, but they probably don't have the same amount of speed, especially if they're trying to slow down to keep Elgin Baylor. You know, if Elgin Baylor was a perfectly healthy and, you know, 10 years younger, no, it's probably fine. Oh, it's probably perfectly okay. Yeah. He's, you know, in his 13th season with a ton of injuries. Yeah, it's very likely they would have said, hey, you know, if we're going to put Elgin out there, we got to slow things down a little bit. We got to kind of chill out a little bit. And without him, you were able to say, all right, cool. We have our older guys in Wilt and West. West is fine. He's going to hold up pretty well. Wilt, we're just going to tell him, hey, get rebounds. And, you know, if you can catch up with us down court, that's cool. But we might try to score before you even get to the half court. And then, you know, then you had Goodrich and McMillan and all those guys. And those guys were just so good. And the rest of the team is a super deep team, too. And that's why we're going to talk a little bit about the, you know, points per games that everybody had. But, like, yeah, there was a ton of guys on that team that contributed very important roles, and everybody was getting on the board and scoring and playing great defense. I mean, they're one of the all-time great teams, and we're talking about one of just the unbelievably great teams. And if you win 33 games in a row, you know, you're pretty good. But they were just a dynamo during this period. And again, those the amount that they won these games by, you know, 30 points, 40 points, 44 points in their 33rd win. Like, they're not slowing down. They're not like, this is getting, you know, because we're going to talk about some teams, and it's like the burden of this win streak is going to weigh down on these teams, and they're going to start, you know, squeaking by like 1 or 2 points or whatever. They win by 44 to get their 33rd, you know, win. They're just incredible at this point. And yeah, 23 of them by 10 or more points, I think, is just pretty impressive as well. But during the streak, Wilt Chamberlain, he averages 12.5 points per game, 20 rebounds per game. So again, speaking to, you know, Sharman saying, hey, look, you're Wilt Chamberlain, I get it, we got a lot of talent on this team, get rebounds, you're still going to get your points, but let's maybe not have you score 35 a game, let's maybe instead kind of slim it down a little bit and spread that scoring around other people, including Gail Goodrich. He averages 26.6 points per game. He does a 42 point game against Houston on December 8th as well. And then Jim McMillan, who I think is arguably the biggest key to the streak, not because he's the best player, but just because you see the change of what this team was before Elgin Baylor goes down, before Jim McMillan's in the lineup, and then when he's out of the lineup. And you see it in his game as well, Jim McMillan. So he averages 8 points per game his rookie season, takes over for Elgin in this year, explodes for 20.1 points per game and 7.5 rebounds per game during the streak as well. I mean, just an incredible run for Jim McMillan. And then finally, Jerry West, also a very good player. He rocked during the streak too. 25.7 points per game, 10.1 assists per game, and even has a 45-point game on December 1st. Fittingly, against the Boston Celtics. Really wanted to put it on the Celtics.
There you go.
God damn it, I'm sick of this shit.
Finally, Bill Russell's gone. I can finally destroy these guys.
Right, he's like, God damn it, I hate these guys.
And yeah, and the point, and you know, one notable thing I think in terms of this, the shift of the style of play, is that they really put, you know, West became more of, and he always kind of went between point guard and shooting guard throughout his career. You know, he was just a guard, basically, but he really, you know, was orchestrating the offense and playmaking, I think, even more than, I mean, he was scoring plenty, obviously, but I think they really changed around things in terms of the speed as well. But I think having him be more the facilitator than he had been in, you know, previously, I think also was obviously instrumental in, you know, both his success and the team's success that year.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Career high assists per game this year as well. It's at 9.7. And, you know, in those peak Laker years when he was scoring, you know, 30 a game or whatever, he's doling out, you know, 5-6 assists per game, somewhere in that range. And then, you know, in his record breaking, you know, it's 31.2 point per game year, only 7.5 assists, which is still very good. But yeah, you see a completely different. I mean, he's right up against 10 assists per game through the season. And like we said, during the streak, he was at 10.1 during that time as well. So it all sets up for January 9th, 1972, which had to be, I mean, this, I really wish I was alive for this. I mean, it had to be one of the great all-time regular season matchups of all time. You have the 36-8 defending champion Milwaukee Bucks versus the 39-4 Los Angeles Lakers. We kind of got that this week, you know, with the Suns and the Warriors, but it was not as deep in the season. You know what I mean? It was still kind of like, yeah, this team's like 18-3 and this team's 18-2 or whatever. It was like, it was good, but I mean, this is like 36-8. This team just won the title. 39-4, the Lakers on this unbelievable run. I mean, this is an all-time game here on January 9th, and it's going to change, you know, the course of the season for both teams, because on this night, the Bucks are going to emerge victorious. They're going to win 120-104, not even that close. I mean, just a beat them down, and they get 39-20 from Kareem Abdul-Jabbar. They get 17 points from Oscar Robertson, 18 from Lucius Allen, and just a great individual effort by the Milwaukee Bucks. The Lakers finally end their lose, or the winning streak finally ends at 33 games. But as we said, this is a great team. They're going to reel off 2 8-game win streaks later in the season, and they're going to finish the year with a record, NBA record, 69-13 record. Obviously, only broken until, withstood until 1996 when the Chicago Bulls broke it at 72-10, and the Lakers would go on to win the NBA title and do it in dominating fashion as well. I mean, they would win their first round series against the Bulls 4-0. They would face off with the Bucks again in a big time Western Conference Finals series, but they would win that 4-2, and then they would go against the Knicks, who, you know, obviously beat them a couple years prior, and beat them 4-1 as well. So a pretty easy path to the finals. Easy in terms of, like, they won easily, not easily in terms of, like, the teams they had to face, but this was a great Lakers team. And in the end, they're going to win a record 81 regular season and playoff games combined. That would last until the Boston Celtics did that same thing in 1986 as well. So just a historic all-time great team, and obviously the longest regular season win streak of all time. That seems nearly impossible to. I mean, we're talking about, you know, the fanfare around a team with like an 18 game win streak. The fanfare around a team, you know, we're going to talk about the next team here with the Warriors, where it felt like it was just everybody was focused and laser focused and hyper focused on this win streak. Like 33, man, I don't know. That seems so hard to do.
Oh yeah, it's hard to imagine. Yeah, it was like basically the perfect confluence of factors. You know, it's certainly the time in which the league, you know, obviously the league had changed a lot because of expansion and because of, you know, the ABA's impact, and, you know, it was a different type of league at the time. Obviously there's a lot of these types of, you know, really long streaks around this time. We can talk about the Bucks, you know, from the previous year, and then the Knicks had a long one breaking the record just the year before. So, you know, they were more common during this time, but 33 is just, you know, it seems almost impossible to imagine, you know, more than a third of the season, almost half the season, you know, having a winning streak like this. Like I said, you know, some teams have gotten, you know, gotten reasonably close, but even not really that close, because it's so hard. You know, it's so hard. And when that pressure, you know, builds and the spotlight magnifies and, you know, the teams start gunning for you, and, you know, with sophistication of, you know, the way that, you know, teams are able to scout and have certain matchups and all that, it's just, it's really tricky. One thing I want to mention here is, you talked about the 2 8-game win streaks, but yeah, the last one came near the end of the season. And the Lakers almost got to 70. In fact, they lost, one of their last 13 games, and it was to the Cavs, who had were in a 15 win season or 20 win season or something like that. Just like a completely, garbage team. That was only the one that they, 23-56. So bad team, but not necessarily garbage team. But yeah, that was the one that they couldn't win, you know, in their last 13 games. Otherwise they would have closed out with 70 wins.
Yeah, it would have been awesome. Yeah, nice round number, which obviously everybody appreciates. I mean, 69 wins is nice. It's nice, but it's not. Yeah, it's not. You know, it's not quite 70. Yeah, it's, you know, and you're speaking a little bit about how tough it would be to do this win streak. It almost feels like once you'd get to this point, there'd probably be a thing where the team would be like, all right, we got to rest some of these guys. Like, you know what I mean? Like, we don't need to be going out there and just like going balls to the wall every single night, because it's like, we want to win a title. It's so much more important for a team probably to, hey, you know what? We'll have a 22 game win streak and we'll win the NBA title. Having a 34 game win streak and maybe, you know, blowing it to try to keep that win streak alive and getting our guys hurt and having everybody have to play every game as hard as possible to keep this win streak alive. Like, a lot of teams might do that calculus and say it's just not worth it. I mean, it'd be cool, but yeah, I totally see in today's NBA it being too difficult to do, and there's just too much good scouting, too many good teams, too many good players, and just ultimately the team itself being like, is this really worth it? Like, having our guys go out there and just try as hard as possible every single game to try to maintain this win streak. It's cool when it happens like organically, but yeah, having to really force it, which probably once you get to like 30 games, like, you're really like at like an insane level. And yeah, we've seen it in recent history. It's just the burden of it is so much for these teams that a lot of times it's like, oh, thank God it's over. Okay, now we can move on and get, you know, focus on, you know, the whole season itself and winning a title.
Absolutely. So, more recent example, Golden State Warriors 2015-2016. So, all right. So now we got to address the whole multi game multi-season winning streak, which I think you and I both agree is kind of a BS concept. So
yeah, I don't love it. Yeah, it's like ignoring a playoffs and then retaining it for the regular season, and it's like a different year. I don't like it.
It's not the same roster. You know, the whole scope of the league has changed. Like, yeah, I don't recognize it. So yeah, but they had a 24 game winning streak, which would be third all time in NBA history. Still pretty good. And yes, so that winning streak in 2016 season, of course, you know, was the first 24 games of the season, which ended up, you know, breaking the record for best start to a season. You know, it began in the first game of the season, obviously, October 27, 2015 against the Pelicans, and it ended December 12th, 2015 against the Milwaukee Bucks. Two notable things about that. One, that's my that was my daughter's 7th birthday. And two, also notable, Rich,
I was there.
Yeah.
Yeah, I was it was me and my buddies. I was texting around, and I was like, man, they're in town here. Milwaukee's not that far of a drive. It's an hour and a half. It's not, you know, it's somewhat arduous, but this is record. You know, this is history. I'm going to be able to watch history. I'm going to be able to watch the Golden State Warriors continue their win streak against the lowly, mediocre Milwaukee Bucks. And oh boy, I was wrong. So I apologize to Golden State Warriors fans, because the streak was over, and you know, I was able to will Greg Monroe into like an all-time great game as Greg Monroe single-handedly destroyed it. But, you know, we'll talk a little bit about it, but this is a great example of like the burden of this win streak really like kind of just weighing down the Warriors. And it was like the night prior they were in Boston, and guys are getting hurt, and they're like limping, and they're just barely able to beat Boston. And it's like, fuck, we got to get on a plane, and now we got to go to Milwaukee, and we got to play Milwaukee like the next night, like, you know, 18 hours later, we got to get back on this court and do it again. And oh, this crowd, I've never heard an NBA crowd louder than the Milwaukee crowd was. I mean, they so badly wanted to win this game and beat the Warriors. It's like the NBA Finals to you know, the Milwaukee Bucks. This was the NBA Finals. We're going to stop these guys. We're going to talk about that with, you know, the Miami Heat and the Chicago Bulls as well, where it's just like, when you get to this deep in the thing, it's like, no, this is our finals. We're going to beat this team. We're going to end this win streak. But yeah, I just couldn't miss this. I tickets were available. They were reasonably priced. Hour and a half drive. I had a friend. I was just going to go on my own, even if a friend didn't want to go. So I was able to cobble together two friends. We went and well, yeah, we'll talk about what happened. So.
Sure. Absolutely. Yes. So average margin of victory during the streak was 14.2 points. And it's interesting that within the streak, there were very dominant periods, and there were periods where they were like getting, you know, by the skin of their teeth, especially toward the end, which obviously makes sense. But some notable highlights: game four of the streak was a 119-69 win against the Grizzlies.
Not 50 nice. 50
point margin? No.
Not no, nice.
No. 50 point margin. Actually, the Grizzlies, you know, you might be thinking, okay, well, did the Grizzlies suck that year? Actually, they were 42-40, so they were not a bad team. You know, it's kind of toward the end of the grit and grind thing. So, you know, it wasn't like they destroyed, you know, the worst team in the league or anything. That was destruction of what ended up being a pretty good team. Game five was the closest margin, at least in terms of the early part of the streak, a 112-108 win over the Clippers. At this point, still have Chris Paul, still have Blake Griffin, you know, still, you know, excellent team. And like I said, they're really the only close game early on in the streak, and they pretty much start to dominate from there up until games 11 through 13. They have single digit wins against the Nets, which is an overtime, the Raptors, and the Clippers. I mean, you know, still more than 5 points. It wasn't like it was a buzzer beater type situation. But, you know, it gets skin. And then they get into a 5-game situation where they win by a margin of 19.4 points. So, you know, they get through game 18, and, you know, they're just rolling at that point. You know, and, you know, half of those games were on the road too. So it wasn't like they just benefited from being at home. But, and one notable one there, game 16, they break the record for the best start in the season, which had been shared by the 1949 Capitals, who we'll get into a little bit later, and the 1994 Rockets. They beat the Lakers 111-77. Kobe Bryant shoots 1-for-14 in this game.
Yeah, so sounds about right for 2016 Kobe. Yeah,
right. Yeah. So, yeah. So that one is, you know, and they're cruising up until, you know, game 19 against the Utah Jazz. They only win that by three, and then you know, pretty much things tighten up for the most part. You know, at this point, they have single digit wins over the Raptors in game 21, game 23 over the Pacers, and then game 24, the final game of the streak, as you mentioned, they beat the Celtics by 5 in double overtime. Really exhausting game. And really impressive to me that the Warriors managed to win the last six games of this streak on the road.
Yeah, you know? I mean, that's an arduous. And I remember it, too. I mean, it was like, and it was like very tight. You know, these games were, the difference between these games, I mean, we're talking like a couple days, you know, like I said, the Celtics, that goes to double OT, and then they got to get on a plane and go to Milwaukee and play the next night. I mean, it was an arduous thing. And then, yeah, it felt at this time like, okay, this win streak is like really kind of burdening this team, and probably it might be better for them just to as we were driving up, I think I had this discussion. I was like, you know what? They might just literally say like, you know what, guys, forget it. Like, Curry, take the night off. Draymond, take the night off. Like, it's fine. We'll let James Michael McAdoo or whatever, like, start the game and see what he can do. Cause it's just like, this is, I mean, guys are getting like sore and hurt and like, what is this really even worth? And I'm glad they didn't do that. I'm glad they did give it an honest try, but yeah, you could totally justify it this time. Like I said, do the thing where you're just like, all right, guys, this is over. Like, this is not worth it. Like, we're really busting our ass to get this win streak, you know, to stay alive. Is it really worth it? Is it really worth, you know, doing this or getting guys hurt or whatever? Maybe it's the best if we just kind of rest guys and end the streak. But yeah, this period in particular was like, I remember at the time, it was just like, oh my God, these guys, there's no way they're going to keep this going. And they kept getting it and they kept doing it. And that made it a lot of fun. But it also, you could see it really starting to weigh on the Warriors here, especially that Celtics double OT. I mean, they had to bust their ass to win that game. And it's like, yeah, totally justified if they just told Curry and all those guys, hey, don't get on the plane. It's fine. Just go home, rest up, and we'll get back at it in a couple, you know, a couple days.
Sure. Yeah, no, and I wonder if it makes any difference being at the beginning of the season versus later on in the season. And as we'll see with the Heat, you know, that was definitely a bit of a different dynamic because of the time in which it happened in the season and the effect it had on them, at least for the rest of the season, although they obviously they rallied and won the championship. But I just want to mention, you know, Steph Curry's numbers during the streak, 32.5 points per game, 5.3 rebounds, 6.1 assists. Shoots a 465 from three and on 11 attempts per game. So yeah, this is like the unanimous MVP year for him. You know, the Warriors, you know, they end up breaking a lot of best start records as they finish the season 73-9, have one of the great regular seasons of all time and one of the great playoff runs of all time up until they blow that 3-1 lead against the Cavs and lose the championship. So, but yeah, I mean, you just, they were such an incredible team to watch. And I think that year in particular, before Durant, and I think the Durant teams were fun to watch too, but I think just the way that it was with, just the way that, you know, Curry was playing with like abandon and just the way that the team, was gelling at that point, the confidence they gained after winning that championship and just how, you know, how exciting they were. It really was just, you know, one of the most fun and exciting teams that I've ever seen play.
Yeah. Oh, I agree. Yeah. It was probably my favorite time watching the NBA during this period of this year. I mean, 2016, I think is the 2015, 2016 season is probably one of my favorites in NBA history because you had you had this team just literally breaking the NBA, like just doing stuff that you had never seen before. Curry just on an absolute another level. I mean, just breaking every conceivable shooting and 3-point record. And then, like you said, the swagger that this team had, like the Miami Heat in their peak. And we'll talk about them in a little bit. They had a certain swagger to them, but this Warriors swagger was like a smiling swagger. You know what I mean? Like the Heat came in as like, you know, the Death Star, the Darth Vader and his guys, you know, just going in, and it was they were like the big heels or whatever, and like the Warriors, like people wanted to beat the Warriors, but they also were just like, these guys are really good and really fun. Like, you know, there was this sort of weird thing where like, they beat our ass, but like, of course they did. Look at them. They're so good. And they had like this fun confidence to them. It didn't feel like this, you know, the Miami Heat felt like, I hate those guys. I want my team to beat them. This was kind of these things that like when the Warriors beat you, you kind of had to like clap and just be like, well, I mean, what are you going to do? Like that guy made, you know, shot 11 times and made every single three. Like, what do you want me to do? It's Steph Curry. Like, you know, this is, they were doing just like ridiculous stuff during this year too, where it felt like some games they were just trying to like break records. I think, you know, they would just have games where they're just feeding a guy for 10 minutes straight and see, like, they were just, absolutely just better than everybody else that they played against. You had Luke Walton filling in at a certain point. That didn't even matter. They're like, oh, Steve Kerr's not their coach. What's going to happen? It's like, nah, Luke Walton's fine. Like, it's this team. Like, they don't need anybody. They're fine. They're just going to get it done. So, yeah, they were just a super, super fun team to watch. And the entire NBA this year was really, really fun because you had this team. And you had, like you said, you know, the Memphis Grizzlies, like a team that played a completely different style. And it worked to a point. It obviously didn't work in that 119-69 loss. But, like, you know, they had a completely different style. There was enough fun teams and unique styles around the league. It's to me, it's one of the better years in NBA history, just because there was so much diversity, and then just like an all-time great playoffs that would end up following that, you know, big time, you know, finals comeback. I mean, you have the OKC Golden State Warriors series. Just an incredible playoff series, incredible season. So
and I do think that your perception of the Warriors, I mean, yeah, especially early on, I do think that they had that they were not necessarily the heels. Now, when Durant came, I think that
switched. Yeah, then it was like, this is a dumb super team. Like, this wasn't a quote-unquote super team. This is like, wow, they just kind of built all these guys and drafted all these guys.
They did it the right way.
Yeah exactly. Right. And then they got Durant. It was like, fuck this team.
So exactly.
They became the heels for sure once they got Durant.
Absolutely.
Oh, I guess I should talk about the game I went to. Are we at that point now?
Oh, yeah, you absolutely should talk about the game that you went to, yes.
So it's over. The streak is over. Right. December 12th, 2015. Yeah. Me and my dumb friends driving up, going to the game. Yeah. And the Milwaukee Bucks, they do it. They do a 28-18 run in the fourth quarter that ends it all. The Warriors, you could tell how slow and things were getting. Steph Curry only 2-9 from three. He still had 28 points. It's still a cool 28 points. Klay Thompson, 4-14 from the field, only 2-7 from three. Draymond Green actually had an awesome game, 9-14 from the field, 24 points. Ooh, Andre Iguodala, 1-9 from the field. When Festus Ezeliya is your third best scorer in a game, that's probably not great. Yeah.
Right.
You're probably not going to continue your win streak, so it did not happen. But the more impressive thing is on the other side, the Milwaukee Bucks. A very, very young Giannis Antetokounmpo plays 42 minutes of this game, has 11 points, only 4-10 from the field. He wasn't obviously his fully refined self at this point, but he gets 12 rebounds, so that's pretty good. Chris Middleton, obviously, future NBA champion here, 3-12 from the field. 7 points, not too bad. You're wondering, man, how did this team get this win? Like, who's stepping up for these guys? Who stepped up was Greg Monroe, baby.
Greg Monroe.
Of course. Yes. As we're talking about the Golden State Warriors destroying the NBA with their space and pay and pace and three-pointers and pace and throwing up shots and getting up quick or whatever. It's big man Greg Monroe, 11-17 from the field, 28 points, 11 rebounds. I remember watching and it was just unbelievable that, like, the Bucks are like, I don't know, let's just back, you know, Festus Ezeliya down and see what happens. And it worked. It worked incredibly well. They're just feeding Greg Monroe. I never thought that Greg Monroe, Milwaukee Bucks Greg Monroe, too. Not Detroit Pistons Greg Monroe. Milwaukee Bucks Greg Monroe would be the reason why.
Just feed it to him in the post, and then, let him work, man. That's what
it was
do.
Like
that's
1995. It was just, it was ridiculous watching this.
Let him.
O.J. Mayo, 18 points as well. Jabari Parker, 19 points. Michael Carter-Williams, 30 points off the bench, 17 points.
This was a different era, man. It wasn't that long ago, but yeah.
This is a team that in a couple years would win the NBA championship with.
Right.
Well, only two of these men still on the team. Everybody else is gone. Rightfully so. But yeah, that ends up being the end of the streak. So I'm sorry. It was me that did it. So.
It was your fault. Well, Bucks fans are happy for you. So
And oh my God, the scene after this game.
Yeah.
It was like the streets were just filled with people just dancing and jumping up and down. Like, you know, they're 10-15. Yeah. The Bucks, you know, they're fine. They're okay. But yeah, it was like game 7 of the NBA Finals for the Milwaukee Bucks and their fans on that night. So a lot of fun.
Yeah. Well, I mean, given my experiences in Milwaukee, there's usually, you know, drunken revelry going on there.
Oh,
anyway,
for sure. So. So this is part for the chorus, but a little extra, juice to it. Yeah,
I get it. Yeah, it makes sense. All right, what do we got next?
Next, we have the Miami Heat, which, by the way, another fun story about this. I could have gone to one of the games.
Oh, wow.
Because it was against, the streak is going to end against the Bulls. And I had tickets to a Miami Heat Bulls game, but I had... We'll talk about which one I had tickets to, which was not this one. I had tickets to another Bulls Miami Heat game that didn't go quite as well for my hometown Chicago Bulls. 27 games for the Miami Heat in 2013. Starts on February 3rd, 2013 against the Toronto Raptors on Super Bowl Sunday and ends March 27, 2013 against the Chicago Bulls. End of season record for the Heat, 66-16, and they're going to win the NBA title as well. So this is the second longest win streak in NBA history per, you know, our actual records, not this
I think one thing worth noting is, you know, beginning of the streak, they're 29-14 and they're not like, I mean, they're playing fine. Obviously 29-14 is a good record, but there's definitely like still some, you know, they, you know, disappointed in the finals last year. They were kind of, or in the first year, you know, they were kind of, it was kind of like, oh, are they, you know, is there something wrong with them? Are they, you know, they're not as good necessarily as they have. I think, you know, Brooklyn at this point, you know, had their, there were some other teams that people thought, oh yeah, they might catch up with the Heat. So, you know, things were not necessarily like gelling completely for the team.
Right. They had beat the Thunder the year prior, which a lot of people will look back on and just be like, oh yeah, Miami Heat won the title. But like a lot of time it was like, ah, the Thunder, like, yeah, it's not a real team. Right. You know what I mean? And rightfully so. I mean, at that time it felt like these were just like this young upstart team that just kind of lucked into getting to here. Obviously it would be the, all three of those guys would become transcendent, you know, superstars. But at the time it was like, yeah, wow, okay, this kind of an upstart team, and yeah, they're pretty good, and yeah, Miami beat them, but it's like, all right, that's not really, I mean, they haven't had tough competition. So yeah, this, you know, having them start off kind of uneven in the season was like, all right, is this team like actually going to make multiple titles? Is this thing actually going to happen, or is this going to be a team that goes one and done and their only title is going to be against Oklahoma City? I mean, it was, every single game was like a globalized, you know, referendum on the Miami Heat. Like, if you weren't alive during this time, it just never ended. Or not alive, I guess. Well, I suppose we don't have any 7-year-old listeners or whatever, but
probably not.
You weren't intently following the NBA at this time, like, you don't maybe realize that like every game was like this just giant referendum on like, oh, every time they would lose, it's like, oh, did LeBron make a mistake? What is this big three? When is it going to end? Who's going to have enough? It was kind of exhausting at a point, but
and they'd won a title at this point, so I mean, some of that was validated, obviously, but it still was, like I said, at this point in the season, it was like, oh, are the Heat, you know, are they playing well enough to, you know, is there something wrong with the Heat, you know?
Yeah, exactly. And what's going to happen too is in this offseason, they're going to retool in a big way, and this is going to cause some other, you know, kerfuffle and anger, is that they add Rashard Lewis and Ray Allen as well. So the rich get richer. They win the title next year. They add two more, you know, solid role players on this team. You know, it's a little bit more of this, oh, this super team, it's ruined the NBA, all this sort of stuff. So, yeah, it ended up being, you know, a team that everybody rooted against. Everybody pretty much wanted them to lose as much as possible. And so on January 10th, they dropped back-to-back games. This would be the last time all season, regular season and playoffs, that they would lose consecutive games. So then on February 3rd, Super Bowl Sunday, they beat the Raptors, and they wouldn't lose again until late March. And some fun notes here. March 10th, for the first time in franchise history, they beat every single team in the NBA as they defeated the Indiana Pacers. So they were able to defeat all 69 opponents by their 61st game of the season. So just an interesting little note there that, yeah, they beat every single person or every single team in the league at this point. And this, you know, largely wasn't a dominant streak like the Lakers were. We talked about the Lakers just basically blowing the doors off everybody. We talked about the Warriors having their run where they were pretty much blowing the doors off of everybody. And, you know, it was as undominating as a 27-game win streak can be, because like, it's still, they won 27 straight games. So obviously, they were still pretty good. But the average margin of victory was just 11.9 points per game. And even the first few games of the streak were close. It starts off with a 5-point win against the Bobcats. Imagine, the streak never even happens because some fake team named the Bobcats defeats Miami Heat. It would
we'll have to check that. I'm not.
Yeah, sure, we'll have to see the record. Maybe I'm wrong. Yeah. I don't know. That's must be a typo.
Yeah.
But 6-point win against the Rockets, and then in February they only beat the Cavs by 4, which every single Cavs Miami Heat game was like Game 7 of the NBA Finals for Cleveland, which is always awesome because they just hated LeBron so much. It actually made it a lot of fun. Then they had to go to 2-0-T to beat the Sacramento Kings on February 26th. Which, by the way, fun fact, Sacramento Kings still bad in this time. Who would have thought that in 2013? They were fine. They were okay. But, you know.
Right. George Karl? Was this the George Karl?
2013.
I don't think so. I don't think that was.
When was the Furious George run of a.
I'll double check that while you continue going.
Yeah, the George Karl era, I don't even remember what years that was or what, I guess, year that was. I want to say is this the Keith Smart era?
It is the Keith Smart
era. Oh, God, the Sacramento Kings. Yeah. They're so bad. Why are they so bad?
You might as well get smart. Yeah.
Do they ever get good, please? Yeah. Keith Smart.
Someday they'll be good.
Oh, God. Anyway, they had Mike Malone, and they're bad still. They've had good coaches. Yeah. They've had good players. They're still bad.
Right.
Anyway, so they go 2-0-2 with Sacramento Kings on February 26th. And then March 6th, it almost ends as the Heat only beat the Orlando Magic by 1 point. The Magic are good at this time. Don't worry. They hadn't started their long streak of being bad forever at this time.
Well, no, they were 20-62, so they were not that good.
Oh, right. That was – oh, never mind. This is post to White. Yeah. Right. Oh, yeah. He had left the season, right?
Yeah, he left the season before, I think. Yeah.
Okay, so they had started being bad. They haven't not been bad since then, so good for them.
Right, yeah.
Anyway, so they only beat them by one. And then things got even crazier as we reach mid-March, where it gets absolutely insane here. March 18th, right. The Heat come back from a 17-point deficit to beat the Boston Celtics 105-103. LeBron James game-winning shot over Brandon Bass. I've not thought about Brandon Bass since this point as well. This clinches the very, very vaunted Southeast Division for the third consecutive year. It extends the win streak to 23 games, second longest in NBA history, obviously. Here, March 20th, the Heat overcome a 27-point third-quarter deficit against the Cleveland Cavaliers. Like I said, every game against the Cavaliers, Game 7 of the NBA Finals here. They win 98-95, extend the win streak to 24. So they go through a 17-point deficit. 2 days later, a 27-point deficit. Then March 22nd, they overcome an 11-point deficit to beat the Detroit Pistons 103-89 to extend their win streak to 25 games. And this is the third consecutive game in which they come back from double-digit deficits, the fifth time during the streak and the 11th time during the season as well. So this became a theme for the Miami Heat. Get down early and then come back at the end and hope it happens. And well, they're going to do it one more time.
Sure. Wait, before we go, that Cavs-Heat game, I will give you $2 if you can tell me the leading scorer for the Cavs in that game.
Oh my god, in 2013.
Yes.
Holy crap. Was the corpse of Mo Williams still around?
He was not still around, no.
Damn. I have no idea.
It is Wayne Ellington.
Oh, you could have given me 10,000 guys. We could have been here for 5 hours and I don't think I would have gotten to Wayne Ellington. Wow.
Wayne Ellington.
Jesus. God.
Yeah. Wow. All right.
Cavaliers basketball. Anyway, March 27th, they overcome an 11-point deficit with Dwayne Wade inactive. Again, this Bobcats team, which I don't know what. A copy and paste error, I guess. But they beat whatever this team. Some team from Charlotte, 109-77. That extends the win streak to 26 games. This is the fourth consecutive game when they have to come back from double-digit deficits. So, yeah, things are getting a little hairy here for Miami. LeBron was pretty damn good during the streak. He averaged just 27.1 points per game, 8.1 rebounds per game, 7.8 assists per game. Very good player, this LeBron guy. He also shoots 57.7 from the field. So a tough assignment this year, LeBron James. If people don't remember, this was like fully unlocked LeBron James.
Oh, yeah.
Especially during the streak, it was like, oh, wait, this is like one of the greatest players ever on one of the greatest streaks. I mean, he just didn't miss. I know he missed some shots. He obviously missed, like, you know, at least 30% of his shots sometimes 40%. But it felt like this dude we talked about the Warriors where they got like fully confident. After they won that title, after this title, LeBron was locked in, especially at this point during the streak where he had just fully assumed like the leadership role of this team and said, hey, Dwayne, you're fine, but like, I'm better than you. I'm the best player on this team. Just let me have the ball. He was just unbelievable during this season. Just shoot, you know, his mid-range game was insane. He was still peak athleticism. His defense was incredible. I mean, this is like an all-time great season here by LeBron. And yeah, those numbers during that streak really speak to that. I mean, just unbelievable shooting. You know, his effective field goal percentage over 60% for the year. I mean, just an incredible player this year. Just unbelievable stuff by LeBron.
Oh, yeah, I mean, again, pretty much the peak of all of his powers because he still has that young athleticism, you know, near what he had in his prime as he used. And he has all of, you know, just the intelligence that he's gained from years of experience and, you know, is gelling with his team better than ever. And it's just, you know, pretty much very, very few stretches of time in which anybody has played any better than LeBron did over these 27 games.
And Dwayne Wade, also pretty good, 22 points per game, 22.7 points per game, 5.7 rebounds per game, 5.6 assists per game.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, and Chris Bosh solid as well. Pretty much exactly what you want out of Chris Bosh. 15.8 points per game, 5.9 rebounds per game as well. So here's where I give you my fun fact. So Christmas morning, I unwrap a gift, and my wife got me tickets to the Chicago Bulls versus the Miami Heat. And I'm telling her, oh man, this Miami Heat is incredible. This is a great game. Like, I can't believe you did this. Thank you so much. They're really good tickets as well. That's my gift. And then as this win streak is happening, I'm looking at these tickets going, oh baby, I am going to see the Miami Heat in the midst of their win streak against the Chicago Bulls, who always give these guys a tough time, always give Miami Heat a tough time, always play, you know, really, really hard. Joakim Noah is like always pissy about, you know, LeBron and the Heat. Like, you know, Dwayne Wade's from Chicago, but we hate him now. Like, oh, it's going to be incredible to watch this game. So on February 21st, 2013, we get to our seats and we watch Miami Heat in Chicago, 22-22 at the end of the first quarter. We're thinking, oh baby, here we go. And the crowd's hyped. Everyone's going nuts. Miami then does 23-13 second quarter, and then pretty much pulls away the rest of the game. It's 86-67. Miami gets the win. It does not go very well. Even LeBron's like 11 of 15 from the field. He's incredible, so at least it was worth it to see him be incredible. But, you know, it's basically a laugher at a certain point. Norris Cole plays like the last half of the game. It's just absolutely dumb. And I'm like, you know what? Hey, you got me Bulls Heat. You know, usually it's a good game. It happens. Right. March 27th. Bulls versus Heat in Chicago.
Again, yeah.
And it ends. And I was like, damn it. Why couldn't you have bought me these tickets? I mean, it made absolutely much more sense for her to buy me tickets to the other game. Right. But she should have bought me tickets to this one because I would have been here for Game 7 of the NBA Finals for Bulls fans when it finally ends. The win streak is over. Despite 32 points from LeBron, 21 from Bosch, 18 from Wade, the Heat couldn't do it. The rest of the team didn't show up. Mario Chalmers, 4 of 10 from the field. I'm sure he got yelled at all the time for that as well.
Probably. So,
this is in peak team doing well. Mario Chalmers misses a shot. Timeout's called. LeBron yells at Mario Chalmers.
What the hell? Yeah, Mario.
Yeah. Great period. In
go back to Alaska, Mario.
Yeah. Ray Allen makes only 1 of 4 threes. Mike Miller, Rashard Lewis, James Jones, Joel Anthony don't play. And then the Bulls get contributions from all over the team. 28 points from Luol Deng. 17 points from a very young Jimmy Butler. Big, big game from Carlos Boozer. 21-17. Big Booze not going to let this happen anymore.
No.
Nate Robinson with 14 off the bench. Unfortunately, Jason, Vladimir Radovanovic did not play in this game. So
did not. Oh, wow. Yeah.
Derrick Rose was hurt, and Vladimir Radovanovic was a DNP CP, or CD. Hey. So.
Yeah, Daquan Cook getting revenge over his former team. You know, 1 from 5 for the field. You know,
yeah. Oh yeah, yeah. This is a whiteboard Daquan game for Daquan Cook.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
So there we go. I didn't go to this game, but that's fine. This is the win streak is over. And then obviously the Miami Heat would have some struggles in the playoffs. They would have a real tough series against my Indiana.
Sure.
Kind of an iconic fun series as well for Paul George in the making of his career, and then an all time great series against the San Antonio Spurs. Obviously, come back from basically what appeared to be death for the big Ray Allen shot and all that sort of stuff, and they end up winning the title in 7 games in one of the all-time great NBA Finals series of all time between the Spurs and the Heat. And obviously they would do it again next year with a different result. But this is a dominant team that played well, but then sort of start to meet their match a little bit and start to kind of slow down once the playoffs got kind of deep. But in the end, ended up winning the title, and LeBron ended up having just an iconically great season as well. So
yeah. Yeah, for sure. Yeah, that really was, that Heat team. It is one of the interesting, you know, turnarounds from like, you know, a good team in the regular season to going through that streak and just becoming a completely dominant team. And I kind of forgot. Yeah, they actually, you know, they didn't just kind of fall off right there. I mean, they finish, you know, the season winning, 10 to 12 games. So they're pretty stout throughout. You obviously winning 66 games during the season. And you know, like I said, they had some struggles there in the playoffs, but you know, kind of ended up being one of the great all-time teams that season, including, you know, one of the combination of regular season and playoffs, and obviously, you know, winning that iconic series against the Spurs at the end.
All right, let's get to a 22-game win streak here from the Houston Rockets in 2008. Begins January 29, 2008 versus the Golden State Warriors, and it ends March 18, 2008 versus the Boston Celtics. And end of season record, 55-27, which is like good, but they won 22 games. So this is the worst regular season record for any team with a 17-plus game win streak ever. So just a very, very fun.
So good, but
it's just like they won 22 games. And that's like we said, every other team that we talked about, Miami Heat won a title. Golden State Warriors made it to the NBA Finals, took an ungodly, ridiculous, all-time great 3-1 comeback for them to lose the NBA Finals and not win the championship. The Lakers win the championship. Spoiler alert, the Milwaukee Bucks that we're going to talk about are going to win the championship. This Houston Rockets team, they lost to the Utah Jazz in the first round in six games. So it's like, right. Well, and obviously a lot of circumstances are going to relate to that. We'll talk about it in a bit. But yeah, it's just very fun here because every other team we're talking about has won 60 games, among the most storied teams in NBA history. The Rockets, they win 22 games. They only win 55 and they lose in the first round of the playoffs. So it's just like, how does this happen? Like, what happened here? But let's talk about how they got their streak. We'll talk about the good times first before we talk about the bad times. But the good times are they replaced longtime head coach Jeff Van Gundy, replaced him with veteran coach Rick Adelman in the offseason. They also bring back Steve Francis, who you might think, oh, wow. And it's like, no, because at this time he had, you know, bounced around the league a little bit, and things had gone pretty poorly for Steve Francis after he had left the Rockets a couple years prior. And do not worry, don't get too excited. He's going to only last 10 games with this team. It is not very good, and he's out. But it's a very weird team, but it's a very fun team. So Yao Ming wasn't fully healthy at this point, and nor would he ever be fully healthy in his career pretty much ever again. But he was still really effective. He averaged 22 points per game, shot 50% from the field. And this was also the last super productive year from Tracy McGrady as well. So this is the team of, you know, Yao Ming and Tracy McGrady, the team of like, hey, what could they have done if they were both healthy at the same time? And they pretty much were never healthy at the same time at any point during this run, except for, you know, largely during this win streak and largely during the season when things are going pretty well. So it kind of lets you know what could have been for this team. But it's a very, very strange let's remember some guys team. They have a 40-year-old Dikembe Mutombo, who you don't remember being on this team probably, but he was. He played only 15 minutes per game and didn't do a whole lot. So, you know, hey, Dikembe Mutombo's on there. And then a lot of other let's remember some guys. You have Rafer Alston, Luis Scola, Shane Battier, Bonzi Wells, Carl Landry, Luther Head, Mike James. Dudes, you know, they had a bunch of guys on this team. Like, I think they had Juwan Howard for a couple games, if I remember correctly, as well. Like we said, Steve Francis did a quick stop. Gerald Green plays like one game on the team.
They had 21 players play for their team, which is usually what you have with like a, you know, a 15-win team.
Yeah, right. And they're all like, everybody who played for this team is like a person that you kind of remember, but you're like, oh, yeah, Chuck Hayes. Yeah, all right. I remember Chuck Hayes. Like, Gerald Aaron Green Brooks.
One game. Oh, yeah. Right. So they had Bobby Jones. Not the Bobby Jones.
Oh, that would be impressive if they had that Bobby Jones.
But Bobby Jones this season set an NBA record, which I think still stands, for playing with five different teams during the season.
Yes, yeah, Denver, Memphis, Houston, Miami, and San Antonio. Plays nine games with Memphis, four games with Houston, six games with Miami, three games with the Spurs. So good for him. But anyway, yeah, this is a very strange team. So January 29th, they're a decent 25-20, pretty much exactly what Houston had been, just kind of hovering around a decent-ish team, but not, you know, a dominant team by any means or whatever. Yao Ming and Tracy McGrady, both healthy-ish, and the team is okay. And then 22 games later, somehow they're 46-20, and Tracy McGrady's vying for an MVP award, and it's like, oh crap, here we go. And it's one of the weirdest win streaks I'd say ever, and it's one of the weirdest win streaks we're going to talk about in this show, because there's no real narrative around it. There's not like, oh, this team did this, and then this happened, or this team was in the midst of this, and then this happened. It's just like an okay team that got super, super hot, won a bunch of games, and flames out in the playoffs. And one of their stars gets hurt. Yao Ming gets hurt, doesn't play in the playoffs. They pretty much don't have enough firepower, and then it's over. And you're like, oh, yeah. And it's not a particularly memorable in the grand scheme of things streak. Like, I think people are like, oh, yeah, Houston did that. It was fun at the time, and it was really cool, but it's just it's such a weird streak because I don't know what to say about it. There's no narrative around it. You know what I mean? There's nothing that we can really – there's not some larger globalized thing that happened because of the streak. It was just they won 22 games. Cool. And that's it. You know?
Yeah. They were just the – and that made it even cooler in a sense because they just – it was like this team that was out of nowhere, and suddenly they're just winning. And it made it exciting just because there was winning and no one was like entirely sure how. Like, you know, because they were, you know, a good to – decent team, but they were one clearly. I mean, after the win streak, people thought, okay, I guess maybe this team could win a championship. Maybe, I don't know. You know, they have a good enough record now, but obviously, you know, things didn't turn out that way. But yeah, it was just it was so out of nowhere. I mean, every winning streak of this length is certainly going to be a surprise, even if it's a great team, just because of how hard it is to do and how rare it is. But especially in this case, it's just completely out of nowhere.
Yeah, and it's not a very dominating team either. The Heat didn't lose back-to-back games. The Lakers reeled off a record-setting win streak en route to the, you know, the biggest and best record in NBA history. The Rockets won 22 straight, but otherwise didn't win more than five straight games for the rest of the season. So it's like, again, it wasn't like they just won 22 games. It's like you said, it makes it pretty cool too, because these other teams are talking about like among the greatest teams of all time, and then there's also this Rockets team, which it makes it pretty fun. Average margin of victory, 12.36. That's dragged down by a few close games early in the streak. They beat Golden State by just four to start the streak. They beat Indiana by three in the second game of the streak. Then only beat Minnesota by six for the fourth game of the streak. And things really get going in late February, and they beat Miami by 12. Then they reel off 10 straight double-digit wins, including three 20-plus point wins. So it's like a weird thing where they're not really confident at the beginning of the streak. They're just barely squeaking by. And then for some reason, they're just like, hey, this fucking rules. Let's just keep winning games. And then they just went great. They were just like really good at this point, which is odd. They're like, hey, we got confidence and we can do this. And they kept doing it.
Yeah.
And then they lose the streak. They get decimated by the Boston Celtics. absolutely get the blows thrown off by the Boston Celtics. They lose by 20, and they would follow it up the next day by losing by 21 to the New Orleans Hornets. So it's just perfect that they reel off 22 straight, and then they lose two consecutive games by 20-plus points per game. But some quotes from the loss to the Celtics. Ray Ferralson says, "Our names will be mentioned there with Hall of Fame people. We have something to tell our kids."
Yeah.
I don't know what Hall of Fame people he's referring to. But
I'm sure.
I mean, I don't know that Rafer Alston's name is ever mentioned with other Hall of Fame people, but...
Yeah.
I mean, we said Tracy McGrady, Yao Ming, and then Rafer Alston, so I guess he is indeed... His name is said with Hall of Fame people sometimes, so... Shane Battier with a quote here says, "I'm too close to the situation right now to really appreciate. When I'm old and gray and can't dribble this basketball anymore, I think I'll appreciate it. Right now, we're still in a playoff run and have some dogs barking at our heels." So just a classic Shane Battier, let's get them.
You know,
we're focused on the next game type of quote here from Shane Battier.
Analytic special right there.
Professional. We'll get him next game.
Yeah. I wonder if somebody should ask Shane Battier if he appreciates it now that he's not close to the situation anymore.
Can he still dribble basketball though?
Probably can still dribble basketball, but he's old and gray. I think it counts. Somebody should ask him, just see. You know, he's like, "I'm not quite yet. I can still dribble, you know, basketball." So,
yeah, I'm not there yet, but talk to me in 5-6 years. We'll see where I'm at. So maybe arthritis, you know, prevents me from dribbling, and then I'll be able to appreciate this. And Tracy McGrady says, "All good things must come to an end," which is unfortunately very ominous for what would be the rest of Tracy McGrady's career, unfortunately, at this point, because he's going to get hurt the next year and just never be Tracy McGrady ever again. But at least this year, we got one last Tracy McGrady season. Just perfect. Just a perfect encapsulation of Tracy McGrady's career. He's good. 21 points per game. The team that he's on wins 22 straight, and then they lose in the first round. It's just like, God damn it, Tracy. Win. Come on.
Oh, boy. So next, we have the Milwaukee Bucks. This is the last all-time NBA winning streak of 20 or more within one season. Another asterisk one that we'll talk a little bit about at the end here. But yes, Milwaukee Bucks. It's the streak began February 6, 1971 against the San Francisco Warriors, ended March 9th, 1971 against the Chicago Bulls. They ended up with a end of season record of 66-16 and a NBA championship. So this is Kareem Abdul-Jabbar's second season in the league. The previous year, the Bucks had finished 56-26. They were second in the league in SRS, but they fell short in the Eastern Division Finals to the Knicks, and the Knicks that 1970 season had actually set a new league record for an 18-game winning streak. So, you know, had already set that recently, and the Bucks were going to have actually a couple chances to get close to that record, which is kind of funny. So, in the offseason, you know, Milwaukee acquired Oscar Robertson, you know, basically giving, you know, Kareem, who's still known as the Lowell Sender, a second superstar. The NBA expands from 14 to 17 teams, and the Bucks end up going from the East to the Western, now the Western Conference. So, interesting stuff. But yes, you know, starting with game three of the season, the Bucks had a 16-game winning streak, which was only – it was tied for fourth in NBA history at the time. So before they get this 20-game winning streak, they have a 16-game winning streak. It's one of the best of all time, tied with the 1965 Celtics. Only the 1970 Knicks, the 1947 Capitals, and the 1960 Celtics had more. So, and that 16-game winning streak, excuse me, was broken by the defending champion Knicks, who were still a thorn in the Bucks' side. Most observers probably expecting a Knicks-Bucks finals now that the Bucks are no longer in the East. So, you know, the Bucks 45-11 when this streak begins, which obviously is a great record. They're, you know, already a dominant team. They're 8.5 games of the number two team in the West, but actually happened to be Detroit. Detroit was good for the first time in forever this year as well. So, in fact, that game three of the streak, which happened against the Pistons, was the closest margin, only a 1-point win for the Pistons, despite Bob Lanier only playing 6 minutes in that game. Other single digit margins happening until late in the streak are game five with the Bulls by 7, Bulls at 37-25. So they're a good team. Game eight against the Sixers by 5 as well, or by 5 points, The Sixers have 37 wins, also a good team. Game 10 against the Warriors, who are 500 teams. It's a pretty good team with eight. So, but yeah, they're just blowing out everybody else. You know, the average margin of victory during the streak was 18 points, which I think is the biggest one out of any of these streaks. They're winning games, you know, 34 points, 36 points, 32 points, 28 points, 35 points. So, game 18, you know, things get a little tough again. You know, they've had, I think, seven or eight straight games of double-digit streaks. They're taking on the 19-55 expansion Buffalo Braves. It was those Braves, man. They're making things
pesky
tough,
bunch, you know? A pesky bunch.
Pesky bunch. And they've beaten the Braves earlier on in the streak. I think that was one of the 32-point margin. But you know what? The Braves, you know, Bob Kauffman's got pride. Don Mays got pride. Herm Williams got pride. Dick Garrett certainly has pride.
Oh, Dick Garrett for sure.
Yeah. And, you know, Dolph Chase is pride, their coach. So it's like, all right, you know, we're gonna make it tough on them. Well, the Bucks win, but only by three, 116-113. They tie the Knicks NBA record. Next night, the Bucks go to Detroit, and they break the record in Detroit, 13-point win, so a little more comfortable margin. The Pistons have fallen off a little bit, you know, during these 19 games during the streak, or, you know, a month or so that this has occurred. And then game 20, the final one, 104-99 win over the Sonics. And then just one night later, 110-103 loss in overtime to the Bulls. You know, their division rival. Now, their division rival, the Bulls. Bulls actually now they're the number two team in the West, but they are 17.5 games behind the Bucks.
Yeah, pretty big gap.
5-11, yes. So, yeah, you know, Bob Love, Jerry Sloan, Chet Walker, Tom Boerwinkle, 21 points, 33 rebounds.
Let's go. Kareem Hu. That's what Kareem I say. Lou Hu. Lou Hu is what I say.
Lou Hu. Tom Boerwinkle, man. The Boerwinkle era was just beginning, you know? 21 points, 33 rebounds. Wow. That's quite the
a lot of elbows. Yeah, Kareem must have just been like, you know what, man, I'm not gonna get hit for this.
I'm sick of this white boy, you know, that's you're fine,
right? Stop elbowing me, get the rebound, I don't care, we're right. Still gonna win anyway, so
yeah.
But he was wrong.
He was wrong, yes. So, and interestingly enough, one thing I didn't really realize that this winning streak came so late in the season, because the last game is game 76. There's only six games left in the regular season during this time. And the Bucks lose five of their last six regular season games, and you might think, oh, they're just going to hold Oscar and Kareem out because, you know, none of these games matter.
Right. Yeah.
That's not true. They play basically their full normal minutes in all but the last game. Now, they had a, you know, almost all these teams are pretty tough. You know, it's they lose to the Bulls. They lose to the Knicks, who are obviously tough. They lose once to the Suns, who are, you know, have one of the better records out West. The Sonics were okay. The only bad team there is the Rockets, which is the last game. And that is one where the minutes are cut a bit for Oscar and Kareem. So, So, you know, they were 65-11 at, you know, they finished 66-16, but like 70 wins was in, like, was a possibility for this team, which is, you know, kind of incredible to think about. You know, and obviously, yeah, hey, you know, they turn around the postseason. They finish 12-2 in the playoffs. They sweep the Baltimore Bullets in the finals. So everything turns out fine. But kind of interesting footnote there.
Yeah, that's strange. Yeah, you would think that, you know, a team capable of winning this many games wouldn't ever lose, you know, five or six with their normal right. players. But yeah, it's a strange phenomenon. And yeah, I think I've always assumed when I've looked at this, you know, Milwaukee Bucks team and see, you know, those red bars on Basketball Reference towards the end of the season, that they had like rested the guys, or, you know, maybe played those right. guys on like pretty, you know, half minutes, or hey, you know what, play the first half and then whatever, who cares? It's fine. Let's build up for the playoffs. But no, they're playing normal minutes. It was just tough teams, and you know, it really kind of slaps the face of you know, the momentum. Because once the playoffs started, they just blew the doors off of everybody, and en route to, you know, just a dominant NBA Finals win. So yeah, the momentum of the regular season did not matter, did not carry over, including losing to the San Diego Rockets in the final game of the season by a lot, you know, and then just being like, eh, that's fine, we'll just go win.
That's fine,
we'll go win the title. So
right, yeah. Kareem, by the way, during the streak, 29.8 points per game, 17.6 rebounds, 3 assists. 53% from the field. So, yeah, good numbers. I mean, like,
not Borowinkle numbers, but good.
Right, good. Right. Yeah, good enough. Yeah, good enough, I would say. Yeah, I believe that Kareem finished second in MVP voting that
two-time
year.
Two-time Borowinkle, right.
Yeah,
right.
So.
That's what I thought, too. We all know who won the 1971 MVP. It was Tom Borowinkle. I mean, we don't even need to look it up. I'm
not
positive of it.
Yes.
Right. So. I know my NBA history, and I know that Tom Borowinkle won the 1971 MVP, which, you know, some people still debate this time that Kareem was probably the more deserving, but I completely disagree.
I believe it was Borowinkle. Yeah, right. Yeah, I think the
don't double check us. Don't add us. We're positive. We got
the intangibles there. I think if it's Borowinkle.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, you got to love those intangibles. Yeah. All right. So one more. It's the asterisk. It's Washington Capitals. It's 20 games if you count multi-season streaks. It is 15 games in the 1949 season. It ends against what begins technically against the St. Louis Bombers, and it ends against the Indianapolis Jets. So, hey, they were related to playing themed teams in the late 40s, apparently.
Yeah, it's a lot of
I guess.
Yeah, you know, I suppose right. You're like in the you know, the after end of World War II, so sure. It's like, our men in blue. It's just so, like,
they,
perfect. Like,
they the
loved the planes, though. The Bombers, the Jets. Good team. Honestly, both cool team names. The Jets is a sweet team name for anybody. Yeah. Winnipeg, Indianapolis, anybody. The St. Louis Bombers is a pretty cool team for a...
Not bad.
Not necessarily. I don't really love bombing, you know, for planes during war. But like the idea of a basketball team being called the Bombers is kind of cool too.
You're so. Throwing the bomber out there, yeah. You know, I get it. I like it. I like it theoretically. Yeah. Were there any other? There were steamrollers too, which obviously are not planes, but is you know, transportation themed at least.
So. Steel. People like we were into steel at this time.
we love. We just cannot get enough of steel. Basically,
things made out of steel. The bullets. Yeah, the bullets.
The bullets. Yeah.
The pistons. Yeah, it was you know, get your hands dirty. Manufacturing. Yeah, rust belts. But
Yes, and Indianapolis Jets is a good name. That's true. Yeah. It's, I mean, Olympians was all right, but
anyway. Jets are always just a cool. Yeah, I love the Winnipeg Jets, and I'm glad they're back as well. Not that I love hockey all that much, but Winnipeg Jets is a cool name. So
sure, yeah. I believe Columbus had a minor league team called the Jets. I believe that was one of their before the Clippers, like back in the day. I believe one of the Jets. No one needs to fact check me on this. No one else cares unless you're in Columbus. But whatever, sure.
You're right. 1955 to 1970. Yep.
There you go. Hey, I know my Columbus. So anyway. The Washington Capitals, they were coached by Red Auerbach. They had a couple of notable winning streaks, actually, this 15 or 20, whatever you want to call it, in the 48-49. And then 17 games in the BAA's inaugural season of 1947. That year, they finished 49-11, but they were upset in the playoffs. In the 1949 season, they actually made the BAA finals, but they fell to the Minneapolis Lakers, who, of course, had George Mikan. And no, nobody on the Capitals was as good as George Mikan, unfortunately, for them. Auerbach ends up leaving after the season, and the team's fortunes fade considerably. They fold in 1951. Their best players, Bob Fierich, who was a three-time All-BAA, he was one of the best scoring guards of his time, basically, you know, behind Joe Foulkes, probably, you know, the best scoring guard in the league. Fred Scolari was two times All-BAA. He was known as Fat Freddy, you know, fat shaming there, unfortunately. But, he, you know, he's listed as, at 5'10", 180, which doesn't sound fat.
Yeah, geez, if that's fat, I'd hate to see what they call me.
It's not good, you know.
Yeah, yikes.
Maybe full-figured Freddy would be better. You know?
Right.
Think about that one. So, Bones McKinney, which is the opposite of fat. He was two times All-BAA. He was later an ABA coach. Also rounded out by 6'9", Kalegi Hermsen.
Excuse me? Say that again.
Kalegi Hermsen was their center. He's 6'9". I'm thinking that maybe Kalegi is a nickname for Clarence Henry. Like, it might be one of those things where, like, your little brother doesn't know how to say your name. So, you know, they ends up, like, saying it funny, and then that just becomes your name.
Okay. As good of a theory as I could come up with, Kalegi. Yeah. That's an interesting one. Yeah, I don't know.
Don't know any Kleggies. I mean, he's from Minnesota. So, you know, you've got that upper Midwest. There's maybe some upper Midwest thing going on there. We'll have to.
Yeah, some regional dialect thing or something.
Of Kalegi, yes. So,
if you look up Kalegi, which I did, it only comes up with him. So it's like, I thought I was like, oh, it's
literally
clearly like
the only Kalegi. Yes.
Yeah.
Only human being ever to be named Kalegi, apparently. So, Jack Nichols was their power forward. All of these guys, except for Fierich, later played for Red Auerbach on the Celtics. I believe Hermsen actually played for the Tri-Cities as well. So, and Jack Nichols actually lasted until the 57 title team. So, yeah, Red Arbuck liked his guys. He liked some guys. He liked Fat Freddy.
Fat Freddy and Bones and Clagy. All the units. Sounds like the worst frat ever. You know what I mean? It's like fucking Clagy, Bones, Fat Freddy. Yeah.
It's the nerdy fraternity. All right. Yes. And we are dedicated, of course, to bringing you facts about NBA players with odd nicknames. Unfortunately, Clagy Hermsen, we don't know that much about. He made two NBL finals with the Sheboygan team during the time they lost both. And then he won the BAA title with the original Baltimore Bullets in 1948. He actually left the NBA, went to the ABL with the Baltimore Bullets, which the ABL was kind of considered a minor league, and the Bullets are part of that. Then the Bullets came to the NBA, and then they won the NBA title, or it was BAA still, I'm sorry. So they went to the BAA, and they won the BAA title. So I'm not sure how minor league the ABL was if the a team going from there to the BAA won the championship. But nevertheless, and a fun fact about me, I am the second person to have liked the Clagy Hermsen page on Facebook. There is one. And so if you want to go to Facebook and like look up Clagy Hermsen, and it's right there.
Yeah, now's your time to get on board, because the trend, get on the bandwagon, because it's going if you don't jump on board.
It hasn't been updated since 2020, but you never know,
Once the pandemic's done, the Clagy Hermsen page will get updated.
They're going to get out there. Yeah. Clagy himself is no longer with us. I'm not sure who is running that page, but perhaps a family member.
The estate of Clagy Hermsen.
Obviously it's the estate. Yes.
But yeah, no, I mean, get on board now. Cause that bandwagon's coming, whether you want to be on it or not. So you get on board. Let's do it. Let's get the momentum going.
Yeah. Good times. So real quick before we jet out of here, the longest postseason win streaks, we're just going to mention them here. The Golden State Warriors have the record 15 games in 2017, almost swept through it, but then they ended up losing. I believe it was game four of the 2017 finals against the Cavaliers, but then wrapped that up in 2015. The Spurs won 12 in a row in 1999. The New Jersey Nets, which was a huge surprise to me, won 10 in a row in 2003. They pretty much ran through the Eastern Conference portion of the playoffs. When they reached the finals, they had a little harder time with the Spurs. They actually ended up going, I believe that series went six games.
It's a much better team than people give it credit for. I mean, they were really, I mean, the idea is like, oh God, these guys stink and they made it this far. How'd they even do this? But like, go back. I mean, you watch those games. I mean, that's a pretty good team, and they gave the Spurs a lot of trouble. I mean, it really was a better team than a lot of people give credit for.
Yeah, absolutely. So, and speaking of the Spurs, they had 10 games in a row in 2012. Yeah, they were running through those playoffs, and then they lose in the Western Conference Finals. Only one of these here where they did not actually make the finals. And then 2016 was the was 10 games for the Cleveland Cavaliers. They ran through the Eastern Conference playoffs pretty easily, but the finals went tougher, although they ended up winning the finals, of course, coming back from that 3-1 deficit and winning the championship. So good times there.
Absolutely. Yeah. That's right. I think we did it. Those are the longest win streaks. Yeah. Clagy Hermsen, Tom Boerwinkel, and Epi Hairston are the highlights of the show.
I'm happy with the show. I am happy Hairston with the show. So I think we can.
We did it. Our streak is alive. Yeah. Ooh, I was a little worried there. I was clammy. The hands were a little clammy.
It's a lot of pressure to put on ourselves.
I'm going to take the next show off, though. That one's on you, because I need to rest up for the other 200 episodes we're going to do, because I just can't. Right. Burden of having to come and deliver.
You've committed us to a lot suddenly. So.
Yeah, it's just the burden of having to do it every. It's just like I need to take the next off, and then I'm good for the next 200 or whatever, if that's fine.
Yeah. Everyone knows we maintain such a vibrant pace these days.
right, exactly. Yeah, it's just the burden of doing these every single month. It's
right, exactly. Months. Right. Yeah, that tough once a month schedule we've settled into anyway. But this was fun. I'm glad we got a chance to dive into this. There's some good stuff here. Thanks everyone for listening. Hopefully you've enjoyed this episode and join our other episodes. You can find us at The Step Back at fansided.com. All of our episodes can be found at it's overbacknba.com.
Yep, indeed. Yep.
Overbacknba.com. You can also find us wherever you listen to your podcast. We would appreciate a rating and review if you do that to help spread the word. And you can find us on social media, on Twitter and Facebook, both of them at Over and Back NBA. So thanks again for listening, and we'll be back again soon.
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you'll get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matters more than ever. Place your money line, prop, or parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park.
You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, activities, excursions, and more in one place to make your trip truly unforgettable. Viator has over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from. Everything from simple tours to extreme adventures and all the niche, interesting stuff in between. So you can plan something that everyone you're traveling with will enjoy. Real traveler reviews give the inside scoop from people who've already been on the experiences you're considering, so you can plan with confidence. Free cancellation helps you plan for the unexpected, and 24/7 customer support means you can travel worry-free. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.